This song, we just sung this, Saparshad Bhagavad Viraha Janita Vilap, this song by Narottam Das Thakur, in which he is expressing his intense feelings in separation from Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the associates of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, most of whom he didn't personally meet. So this, at least he didn't meet on the, in what we would call the conventional platform. And this song is generally sung on the disappearance day in remembrance of what we may call high-level Vaishnavas. Of course, we are today singing in honor, this in honor and remembrance of our God brother, Sridhar Maharaj, who has just passed away. It's said, even among the Kamis, it's said that we generally only appreciate people properly after they leave. It shouldn't be like that, but somehow the world is like that. At least if we have some good quality in us, then we tend, after people have passed away, we tend to remember all their good quality, or to see that whatever we might, during their presence, what we might have seen as a fault, then after they pass away, then whatever that might have seemed to be seems very insignificant, especially in the case of devotees who have dedicated their life to the service of Krishna. Whatever apparent fault we might have perceived, it seems very insignificant in face of the fact of the full dedication of their life in the service of Krishna. So I'm mostly going to speak about my own association with Sridhar Maharaj, my own personal experiences, whatever I've been able to remember in the last couple of days, I've been writing it down. Sahotra Maharaj yesterday spoke about Sridhar Maharaj's own remembrances, based on what Sridhar Maharaj had told him. He didn't speak so much about their own personal feelings. So I'm mostly going to speak about my association with Sridhar Maharaj, which began around 1989-1990. Before that, I hardly met him. I went to Bombay once in 1977, just 1 month after I'd come to India with the intention of staying, and then I didn't go again till 1989, actually, for various reasons. I was over on the other Bangladesh, Calcutta, Thailand, all those other places. So, and then from 1989 since then I've been going regularly. I've been in and out of Bombay. I'm always going in and out of Mumbai, and with very few exceptions, I always stay in Juhu. So my association, it was 89 was also the year I took sannyas. So my association with him began around that time, and I think it was late 89 or during the second half of 1989 that I got this DCM. I was looking for Gokul. I thought Gokul was sitting there. DCM Toyota van. Where he's sitting there. You remember that? DCM Toyota van?
Yeah, yeah.
That it was property of ISKCON Bombay, but it was considered Sridhar Maharaj's van. So there was some kind of a deal I had to purchase from him. That DCM Toyota van, Sridhar Maharaj had designed it for traveling and preaching, and he'd used it for some time, and then I took it over second hand, and that actually is that DCM Toyota van, which was like the kind of best thing in India at the time, because they just started to have foreign companies making vehicles in India. It was an 86 model. So I think about that, 85, 86, like that. So that is actually the seed of what is now ISKCON Ceylon, in the sense that I was taking that van out and traveling, and then Gokul Chandra, who was staying in Baroda and doing book distribution, then he took Pati out, and then Pati gradually started traveling all over India, and then that vehicle was traded in, and with the money and a little bit more, this vehicle here, this Tempo Traveller, was bought, and then from that traveling party came, it's a long story, which is another whole, I won't get into it. Anyway, that's ISKCON Ceylon now, more or less. So you could say the seed of ISKCON Ceylon was in that vehicle which I took in. We didn't see the result manifest of that. We couldn't imagine at that time. But it was in that DCM Toyota van, which I bought from him. At first, Shira Maharaj was rather brusque with me. Do you know what brusque means? It means a little, you know, just not speaking much and quite sharp also. He was mostly like that at first. And especially because this vehicle, I wasn't able to pay the required amount in time. So that also contributed to that. Yeah, now we laugh. His disciples, just like he himself said, Prabhupada was heavy with certain disciples, so some of his disciples also know very well that he can be very strong and it can be difficult to take, just like Shuta Kirti Prabhu said once that Prabhupada used to chastise me, and it wasn't pleasant. It was very heavy and very difficult to take, but then Shuta Kirti said that I'd do anything to have him again chastise me. No. So in the beginning he was somewhat heavy with me, and there was at some point, I'm not exactly sure of all the chronology, I can't remember. Like I said, I was in and out of Bombay, coming, getting books, and I was doing some work with the BBT. And there was some kind of accusation or rumor against him. But I didn't get involved in the whole thing, but I don't go along with all that. I don't accept this. It's just, you know, silly gossip. Maybe he appreciated that or whatever. I don't know. But then from that time on, he always treated me as more or less as a friend. And he's definitely an older brother in all respects. But he treated me more or less like an equal, like that. And there came a point, it seems to me, that there came a point where, well, he actually said to me once that now I just wanted the main focus of my life. He said that whatever service I'm doing, so the main thing I want to give myself to devotees and reach out to devotees and give them association and be friendly with them. It seems like he made a definite decision at some point. Maybe before that he was more, again, you could say it's my speculation, it seems like that to me. He was more oriented towards achievements, you know, getting things done in proper service. So it seems at some point he made a decision that the main thing that he wanted to do was just like to give his time to devotees and give their service. And he gave to me also. Fairly recently there was an occasion where he could have got very heavy with me. There was some incident, some heavy goings on in Croatia which were instigated by my fallen self, some controversy. So that he wanted to speak to me about, like, maintaining the peace and all this kind of thing. So he made the effort, even though he was quite sick, he came to see me. And at that time he could have been very, well, he did speak to me quite frankly, but at the same time he did it in a very friendly man. I was quite impressed, actually, how he didn't. One thing is, as you might have noticed, he was a very different kind of person to me. His everything, I mean, his character, his approach to Krishna consciousness, everything was very different. And we both knew we were very different. But there wasn't any problem, and we had different opinions on many things, but a different outlook. But at the same time, there was very good rapport with him. And actually, I was thinking back that actually many times over the years, because I was always coming in and out of Bombay, I hardly ever spent any time there, but many times actually we spent time together, talking together. Practically every time when I went to Bombay, if he was there, then we'd spend 20 minutes, half an hour, 1 hour together talking. And many of the things that we discussed, won't relate to you, because it was like in-house talk, you could say. We're talking about many times we discussed about ISKCON and the various issues and difficulties and personalities, either at the local level, Juhu level, or many times at India level, mostly like India level, and then other times world level, like this. So many of the things were not meant to be discussed with others. So I was just saying that meeting in Croatia, I mean, he was actually he understood that I had something which I felt very seriously about, and he respected that, although he totally disagreed with my approach and he wanted to convince me to change it. So talking about Juhu, most of my memories of meeting with him are in that Juhu temple. Although other places, of course, we also met, mostly in Juhu. And of course, how much that project meant to him. His Prabhupada said that Bombay is my office, but Vishuddha and Vrindavan is my place of worship and Mayapur is my home. But all three were for Sridhar Maharaj. That Radha Rasbihari's temple in Juhu, all there was his home, his place of worship, and his office. It was all, although he went to many places, but that was always his base. Now, yesterday, Suhotra Maharaj was telling how Sridhar Maharaj had told him how Sridhar Maharaj had observed Prabhupada, how he was very friendly with Indian people and involved with their families in a manner that might be considered unusual for a sannyasi. So that reminded me of one, not really incident, but in 1989 at Kumbh Mela, a group of us were invited to take lunch prasad in the home of a life member in Allahabad. So we were there, and then afterwards one of my godbrothers, who himself was a householder, said to me something like, well, I didn't think that was very proper. He was, he was so friendly with the family and playing with the boy. The young boy, I remember this, that he got that from Prabhupada, actually, to be very friendly with family, because India is family-centered, and the Prabhupada gave that idea, love me, love my dog. He said that in relation to how we should approach Krishna. If we want to approach Krishna, then we have to approach through the devotee. And Prabhupada gave the example, if you pat the in the Western countries, if you pat the dog on the head, then the man likes you, the dog owner. So Prabhupada saw that most people are not very much philosophically inclined, and they're very much inclined towards their family. So Prabhupada was like that also. And Sridhar Maharaj was also very open and friendly with many people. I don't know how many disciples he had. If there's a disciple-making league, as some devotees seem to think, it's like, and I say, oh, he's got so many disciples, and he's got so many disciples. Oh, he's only got so many disciples. So, in the league ratings, Sridhar Maharaj wasn't very high on the list. But then there apart from his own disciples, there are many, many who he was very close to and spent time with, and in Bombay especially, so many people he knew who weren't directly his disciples, but he was very close to, like a family member, you could say. Sometimes I was saying about how he was very friendly to me, but sometimes he used to embarrass me also. That sometimes, you know, without any warning, in public, he'd start praising me in front of others. Who was that? Who was reminding me that we had a joint class? Was it last year in Mayapur or 2 years ago? Last year in Mayapur. What happened? I was scheduled to give class, and then Sridhar Maharaj wanted to give class, and there's only, you know, there's only so many days, there are only so many people can give class. So, okay, he was going to give class, but then he said, "Well, why don't we both give class together?" So that's how it worked out. But then he started off with all this rubbish. I mean, sorry, I shouldn't say that, because, you know. But anyway, I thought it was rubbish. I must be frank. He was saying about, you know, this. He started praising me, so then I kind of chastised him after that. That, you know, you're sitting on the Vyasasan and the Srimad Bhagavatam class, and you're supposed to speak the truth in Bhagavatam class. So all this praise of me, you know, what is this nonsense? Something like that. So that was a nice exchange. But anyway, now I'm going to say one anecdote which about myself, which has got nothing to do with Sridhar Maharaj, but I'll relate it back afterwards. In Bombay once, one elderly lady invited me to her home. She lived close by, and I took lunch in her home at midday. She was a simple lady, Deviki Devi Dasi. She told me she was initiated by Prabhupada, which I don't know. It's quite possible. Prabhupada gave initiation very easily in India, especially. Often people would come and ask for initiation, Prabhupada. Tejas Prabhu told me once that one young lady came up to him once and asked for initiation, and it was in Delhi. And going off the topic of Sridhar Maharaj a bit now, and so Prabhupada asked Tejas, who was a Tamil, what do you think? And he said, well, you know, I never seen her before. I don't know who she is. I don't think we should give her initiation. And Prabhupada said that you do not know what preaching means. So he said to the woman, give me the beads. So he took the beads, turned them over in his hand, and gave them back to her and gave her a name. And she was never seen again. So anyway, this lady was Prabhupada's disciple, Deviki Devi. So she invited me to lunch. And she was a very simple person. So in her simplicity, she said, she was talking about Prabhupada, how Prabhupada sometimes used to eat in her home. And she said about Prabhupada, he liked to eat. So that's a fact. Actually, Prabhupada liked to take. Sometimes he would cook for himself, like this. He said, your own cooking is the best, like this. So Sridhar Maharaj liked to eat. I'm saying that, I gave that incident just so you can understand that saying it is not necessarily a mundane quality. He liked to take Krishna Prasad. Once I took lunch with him, and his opinion of me changed, because on that day I was very hungry. And I ate a lot, and he seemed to think that I was only eating two chickpeas every 3 days or something. So he often commented about that afterwards, that, well, he may be skinny, but he knows how to take prasad also. One thing that was not one very apparent in him, that he was actually quite competent in Hindi, more so than you might think, because he didn't speak, he mostly only spoke in English. But at the Ahmedabad temple opening, he gave a lecture in Hindi, and I was quite surprised, because I hardly ever hear him speak in Hindi. I mean, he's a little captured, as the saying goes, but it was, you know, it was a fired up lecture, how you're giving up your culture, you should take up this Krishna conscious culture. So, and I said to him afterwards, hey, that was a great lecture, you know, his typical enthusiastic, speaking loudly, roaring. Later I came to know that he had spent 1 month living in Narayanpura, which is, I just visited, it's in Karachi, and if you're there, well, if you don't speak Hindi come Urdu, then there's no communication with anyone, so he probably picked up a lot there. It's a very, it's the Bungi, it's otherwise known as the Bungi colony. It's a very rough part of it. It's, I mean, the people, are, they're Bungis by caste. So, I mean, if you know what that means, you know. If you don't, then you have to spend more time in India, then you'll get to know. So, his Hindi was actually quite good, although he didn't speak it that much. It was a, it's like me, you know, I don't speak it unless I have to, I'm lazy. He liked, his preference was more to, he's open to everyone, but in India there's a, as we were discussing, there's a definite, just now, there's a definite class demarcation. So he liked to preach to the elite more, or elite as they say in India. But actually the pronunciation is elite. In Indian English it's the elite, or the elites, which is Indian English. Which actually Prabhupada wanted, that Juhu project was especially meant for that, for preaching to the elite. I happened to be present when he gave his first ever initiation. Was it Trivikram was the first one? And I think after that came Aradhana, I'm not sure. There was one, or maybe they both came together. I think he just initiated one young brahmachari called, he gave him the name Trivikram. And then after that there was another, Aradhana, who later went to America, and he's still in. I asked, maybe a couple of years ago, I asked Sridhar Maharaj about Aradhana. Are you still in contact with him? He said, yeah, I go and stay with him whenever I go to America. Like that, so. I just remember seeing him, you know, his bowing down before Prabhupada. The mood of taking complete shelter of Prabhupada to perform this difficult service was very much apparent in the look on his face at that time as he bowed down to Prabhupada. So eventually he had, I don't know which year it was, I can't remember. You can find it, I'm sure among his disciples he must have, maybe, it's quite, I don't know, it must have been early 1990s, something like that. He didn't take disciples for quite a while.
1995.
Yeah, he didn't. Is it so late? Is it so late?
Huh? He came to Croatia and Slovenia. He didn't have disciples. Maybe that was. I think that was.
He was hardly taking disciples.
No, 1995.
Was it so late? Huh? So, well, there may be other reasons for that also. Which, you know. Anyway. So mostly his disciples, as far as I know, they're mostly. Some in Bombay, a few disciples there, and then he had quite a few in Croatia and Slovenia also. About Gokul Chand, just one comment he made fairly recently, maybe it was even this year, he made I was, well, we were talking something about his disciples and my disciples, and he said, Gokul is a gem. He said that. Yeah. I just remember he said that. Although previously he'd had some different opinion. He thought, what is this? You know, they're just a bunch of people. What are these people just running all over India? What are they doing? But later on he had more appreciation. So, often we used to run into each other in the foyer in the Juhu temple. You know, that area where you just enter the guest house. So, one time, I'd been out somewhere and he'd been out somewhere and we saw each other and I said, you look a little sick, Maharaj. And he said, yeah, I have Hep C. I didn't know what that was, so he explained it to me. And he said, it's not active now, but it could become active any time. And if it becomes active, then I won't be around for more than 6 months. I might not be here for more than 6 months. So, you know, it's just like, you know, we just, you know, how, you know, you look a little sick, how are you? And so, well, you know, I'm on the way out. I'm not going to be here very long. So, and then that was a different phase. Then a different phase of his life began. That he actually went on for many years with this severe health difficulties. One time he said to me that, you know, I was a good boy. I wasn't in all this drug scene or any such thing, just to some bad association. Maybe a couple of times I had this intravenous injection and now somehow or other I got this. I want to serve Krishna, but somehow or other I got this bad karma. I remember he said that I was a good boy. That was the typical kind of way he'd speak, is like that. So, for some time he was staying at Mira Road. There was one apartment there. Haridas Prabhu got an apartment there, and that became Sridhar Maharaj's base for some time. It was right just opposite the. Well, it was next to the Mira Road temple, was and is, which is just opposite the Bhaktivedanta Hospital. So he's good in all ways. He was in Bombay. He's right next to the temple, and there's a hospital there if he needs. So I went to visit him once there, and we spent some time together. And he was telling me about his exchange with Harikesh, which I was a little shocked. You know, I might want to keep in contact with him, but he was one of only two people in the whole movement who were like really in ISKCON, who were ISKCON leaders, who were keeping contact, because he showed me one of Harikesh's letters and it was just, I couldn't have handled it. But his idea was that, you know, let's try and keep in contact with him and try and keep some line of communication open with him. If he ever improves, we can try and bring him back. So he's very, very merciful in that way. He kept hope even for the most hopeless. So after speaking with him, then I spent some time speaking with Mayapur Das, who was named such, presumably because even though he was diagnosed as having hepatitis C, which did start to become active, it seems, fairly soon after that. I guess, I don't know, I don't want to get into it. The medical details I don't know so much about. He told me on several occasions, but I couldn't follow it. He all the technical terms on this. Anyway, for quite some time, Mayapur, why he was called that, because the GBC had put him in charge of raising funds for the Mayapur project, which is no small service. And we talked sometime about that also. So Mayapur, his disciple from Croatia, was given that service. So I went to the room. It was evening, so I was going to stay the night in the hospital and give the class the next morning in Mira Road Temple. So Mayapur Prabhu took me to the room, and we set it up in the mosquito net and everything, and I said, I can't understand it. It must be a very difficult service to look after your Guru Maharaj just in this condition. And then in a matter-of-fact voice, just at that time, Adbhut Hari had also been inducted into the service. He was just new at that time, but Hare Krishna. But previous to that, Mayapur had been alone serving him. Later on, there became like, towards the end, there was like a whole team. But for many months, it was just Mayapur Das. And then for about an hour, he told me, confidentially told me, I guess now we can say, it was actually a very, very difficult service. I mean, having to be everything 24 hours a day, and also do your, his sadhana was finished, of course, and then he was telling me some of the details. It reminds of Ishwara Puri with Madhavendra Puri. There's some of the medical details. The doctors, they can understand. I mean, cleaning up the mess and then Srila Maharaj himself being very sick sometimes, and then with that sickness, then he was wanting that, you know, everything be. Well, anyway, he would be very heavy on Mayapur Prabhu's case sometimes, and even he was trying his best, but it was very difficult to do everything perfectly all the time. So it was very difficult. I told him that it was a great opportunity to get so much mercy. So actually, the service that Mayapur Prabhu has done, that is also. Highly complimentary. What's the word? Complimentary. No, compliment. Yeah, that's the word. Yeah. So he got the opportunity. He got the opportunity to do some such service, which is not very. You just have to be fully surrendered. That's all. There's no other. If you're going to do it, then you have to be fully surrendered. There's no other. Well, you can't do it half-heartedly. There's no way to do it half-heartedly. To care for someone in such a condition. Of course, a nurse may do, and nurses are complimented. They also get paid. It's a job for them also. So then, coming up to more recent times, fairly recently, we had some email exchange. This was less than a year ago. And he was telling something about. He wrote something like, I can't remember exactly, he said, sorry I'm late in reply, but I just came out of a coma or something like that. And he could, so I was encouraging him in the letter that you make the effort to stay on with us. And he wrote back something saying that I'm feeling disappointed and why should I stay? Something like that. So anyway, I was encouraging like that. And then just in January of this year, I was quite sick. You remember I came here, I was quite sick. I was sick. And although I realized that, you know, this is nothing compared to me. It seemed to me like quite sick, and you know, all my daily functions were affected, but it's nothing to like having cancer or developed hepatitis C or anything like that. So anyway, I spoke with him. He was in hospital, and I was just passing through Juhu. I just missed him one time. I was just going to go and see him, then I told him he'd just been rushed off to the hospital. So I came back some few days, a couple of weeks later. I was just passing through. I phoned him. He wasn't available. Then he phoned me back, and we spoke for some time. I said to him that I'm really appreciating, because I've only got this, you know, some fever, which will pass over and cause. But you've been having this severe sickness for months and years, and you're relatively unaffected. I mean, he'd go through several times. He went into coma and came out, but then he'd be jolly and strong. Oh, that's one incident I remember. That once I saw him again in the foyer in Juhu, and looking somewhat sick, but somewhat strong also, somewhat better than before I'd seen him last time. He was speaking in that usual strong voice, and I said, "Maharaj, you look pretty good." And he said, "I may look pretty good, but I don't feel good." He said, "In the last 2 days, I almost slipped into coma twice. And like this, I can slip. I can go into coma any time, and then there's no saying if I'll come out of it." So he said, "I'm just trying to go on, but I'm trying to look good, but actually, my head is spinning round and round like this." So he went on for months and years. Then I asked him, you know, "What's your program?" He said, "Well, I'm going off to America now. I'm going to the New York Theatre." So he was determined to go on preaching and giving his association to these. Not going to New York, I'm going on a tour of America. He said, after that, I'm going to go and see Giriraj Maharaj. He was determined to go on, despite his health condition. So the next time I met him was in Mayapur, where before Gopurnima. This drama had come out on the, we'd seen on the email that he's gone to Canada, and now it looks like the end is nigh, that he won't last, so he won't be in our presence much longer, and they were wondering even if he's even going to get to, so he's going to go to Mayapur, so we were even wondering if he's going to get there at all. But by Krishna's grace, he reached Mayapur safely. And we wonder if he's going to reach there. But then when he reached there, I somehow had the feeling that actually he may be with us for some time. Because he related one incident to me once. I said something to him like once that... Well, I can't remember in which context, but something like, you probably aren't going to be with us much longer, or something like that. And he said, "Well, maybe, maybe not. Maybe I'll be here longer than all of you." He said that he related an incident that Mahavishnu Goswami, he had a stroke in London, and that time Tamal Krishna Maharaj came to Mahavishnu Maharaj and said to him, Tamal Krishna Maharaj said to Mahavishnu Maharaj, Sridhar Maharaj was relating this to me, that, "Maharaj, keep a place for me up there." And Mahavishnu Maharaj had said something like that, well, you know, you might go before me, which actually happened, because Mahavishnu Maharaj recovered and went on with his activities in full strength. Although it seemed like being so old and having a stroke that it was, you know, could have looked like it was the beginning of the end of his sojourn in that particular body, but it didn't happen like that. And then suddenly, unexpectedly, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was quite younger and he passed away. So actually I was quite happy that Sridhar Maharaj is going to Mayapur, in as much as that mostly our devotees, they go to Vrindavan. If they know that they're going to pass away soon, it seems like that. Mostly they all go to Vrindavan. And I don't personally know of anyone who went to Mayapur particularly. Gaur Govinda Maharaj passed away there suddenly. Tamal Krishna Maharaj passed away there suddenly. But Sridhar Maharaj was the first I know, and that's also, if I have the opportunity, that's my desire. If I ever get to such a stage, I want to go to Mayapur. So I was pleased with that, because that's just a personal thing that I think we should give even more importance to Mayapur than Vrindavan, that take shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But anyway, I had some kind of feeling, which turned out to be wrong, that maybe he will stay with us for a longer time. He didn't immediately pass away, as it seemed that he might have done at that time. So I met him in Mayapur when I was going to the Samadhi for Prabhupada's bathing. That was the day after I arrived. There was the Abhishek for Prabhupada. And then I saw Sridhar Maharaj was coming, was supported on one side by Devaki Nandan Prabhu, who had many years of serving with Devaki Nandan Prabhu, and you know, they're both pretty hot personalities, and they had plenty of clashes, but they're both dedicated to the service of Radha Ras Bihari. So I offered my obeisances, and I took the other shoulder, and then he said, I'm just going to then he immediately started preaching to me. Then he was in the middle of preaching to, as he was walking along, he was preaching to Devakinandan, and Abhiram was there, Maha Mantra from Delhi. Oh, the first thing, of course, I'd never seen him so thin looking. He's lost a lot of weight. He's a different figure, and very drawn, and obviously very weak. His voice was weak, but he was speaking with even though his voice was weak, it had the same conviction and strength of purpose as ever, even though physically his voice was weak. So seemed like he'd been preaching to them about the building the temple, and then he started to preach to me also, that you also have to do something for this in whatever capacity. But then he turned to the real men who get things done, like Devaki Nandan and Mahamantra and Abhiram. And he was preaching to them on how you have to dedicate. It's going to be a group effort. It's not a one-man's job. That was one thing that I said to him the first time I met him after that GBC meeting, in which the GBC had asked him to take charge of the fundraising for the Mayapur temple, which subsequently he didn't get into very much, as he was mostly preoccupied with health, and then whatever other energy he had, he was spending with devotees. But that was, I was saying that obviously this is not a one-man job, Maharaj. It's going to be a group effort. And then he told me so many things, so many plans and teams and this and that. So then he was preaching to them, and he was saying again and again that you all have to cooperate to do this service for Prabhupada. especially he was trying to get Devi Ginanda and the Maha Mantra, because you know, there's some tension between them. So he's trying to, they're both very big fundraisers, the two biggest in India, consistently over the years. They both had the knack of cultivating big rich people and inspiring them to dedicate, to donate large sums for Krishna's service. So that was the point of his. So anyway, he said, I'm just going to go and see Tamal, he said. So he walked over to Tamal, Krishna Maharaj's samadhi, and Sridhar Maharaj leaned into it, and he was talking to Tamal, Krishna Maharaj, and his voice was very faint, and I couldn't catch everything he was saying, but he said something like, I'm probably going to come and be with you soon, so he was saying like that. So then again, then he sat in the shade just in front of the samadhi, and again he was preaching to Devikinanda and the Maha Mantra, and got them to clap their hands together. That was quite an achievement. So he was very much a man of ISKCON, of Prabhupada's movement. He was very much concerned with the movement, and his identity was wholly as a servant of this movement. And although we had very different outlooks and on how best to serve the movement, his was more of syncretism, right? No, synergy, bringing everyone together. And I was more of, you know, let's get our principles right first. So he often used to preach me about that, and I disagreed with him, but anyway, we
agreed to disagree.
Yeah, like that. There was actually, if I think about it, we had a very nice relationship, actually. There was no like tension between us or any such thing. Always like that, even though we were so different. So anyway, at that time when he was sitting under the tree in front of Tamal Krishna Maharaj's samadhi, he just said to me, I can't remember, again I'm paraphrasing, I can't exactly remember the word, he said, just to add to the fun, I've also got a hernia now. Hernia problem, which is something, some muscles, the hernia rips. I don't exactly know what the hernia is, but it's damn painful, I know, because it's quite a few devotees.
Yes, abdominal wall, you know, that keeps everything inside. It opens up somewhere in the lower region, and then intestines start to come out under the skin.
It's very painful.
Very painful.
So the next time I saw him was at the installation of the Panchatattva. I saw him, of course. I didn't speak to him at that time. Kirtan was going on, and I was surprised to see him. That's what he wanted to do. He wanted to come to Mayapur for the Panchatattva installation. He wanted to stay for that. So he was on the altar. I noticed he was wearing a t-shirt on the altar, which, you know, is a little unusual, because usually devotees, they just wear some chador or something like that. But obviously, he didn't want to show, and it was a proper thing, that his body must have been very skin and bone kind of thing. So that's not. He wanted to do that service of bathing Panchatattva, these huge pots with different substances in, how he could hold them. So he wanted to do that. He was there, you could see, everyone could see his whole face was like, it was obviously a great effort for him. But he was doing it. And then he offered the arati. And he required two hands to hold the fan. He was fanning Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I think that typifies his whole life, that he wanted to use all his energy for serving the Lord. So then, I went to see him. And it must have been 2 days before, two, 3 days before, maybe 3-4 days before Gopamila, something like that. So he asked, when did I come to Mayapur? And I said, I'd come. And then I went away again, and I came back again. He was probably wondering, you know, why I hadn't come to see him. So, well, one reason was, I mean, among other reasons, apart from being very busy, was that I was planning to go and see him when things had died down a bit, and because I was thinking that he's not going to leave, he's probably going to be, because maybe what he told me that time, I had some wrong premonition. I went to see him, and it was good actually. I went after everyone else had been to visit him, because we were just alone for an hour or something. And then this was the last time. This was, it was maybe, I can't remember, 3-4 days before Gopanim.
On the third,
it was 3 days before Gopanim. So, he was lying on his bed with his back towards the entrance to the room. So it looked like he was sleeping. So I asked, and Buddhahari was there at the time. I know that inner group of his disciples, I know them quite well actually, that Mayapur and Buddhahari, Achyutananda, somehow or other I've been associated with them over the years. It's the Croatian link.
Croatian Mahatma Srila Maharaj.
Buddhahari was with this party for some time, and Mayapur, I'd see, he was also for a short time with you, but then I used to see him all the time with Srila Maharaj. And Achyutananda was, he was in close contact with me when he was back to Elvis. Yeah, back to Elvis. And he actually said to me something like, well, you know, I was quite close to you, and then I took initiation from Sridhar Maharaj, and as you know, almost like apologizing or something. I said, well, that's very good, you took initiation from Sridhar Maharaj. He needs also some disciples to serve him, so, and serve him like that. There's another whole, anyway, there's another whole thing between, there's another devotee who had some, he was quite close to me, and then he took initiation from Sridhar Maharaj, and there was a whole, he was having his problems, so between myself and Sridhar Maharaj, we kind of worked on him like that. It was a joint operation, devotee in that part of the world. We spent some time working on sorting, trying to sort out his mind of that devotee. So anyway, I saw him there, and I was getting, so Adbhutari said, well, I'll just see if he's actually resting. Because at first of all, I saw him like that, and then Buddhahari was immediately going and said, wait, don't wake him up if he's resting. So then Buddhahari told me, well, sometimes he's just lying like that, but he's not actually sleeping. So then he took darshan of his Nrisimha deities, and then Buddhahari told me, yeah, he's awake, so go and see him. So I came around the other side of the bed, off my business, and he looked up and smiled, Haribol. And I just went, Haribol, just very nonchalantly. He's pleased to see me, obviously. And then we started talking, and he actually spoke during that 1 hour or so. He spoke mostly, although it was an effort for him, but he liked to, he was gregarious, maybe shy underneath, but gregarious also. So he liked to be with people and speak with people. And so he was mostly speaking. I had to bring up the chair to come closer because he was speaking very quietly. He was straining himself to speak. So at first he was mostly telling me some of the details of his health condition. And I reiterated to him that, you know, I've just been sick for the last, most of the, I'm just recovering from, I was sick for about a month. And, you know, I can't imagine, and my sickness is nothing like your sickness. So, and I was just for 1 month and you're going on for years. So I just have some insight into what you're going through. And I said to him, I said before that also, I said at this time also that he's a great inspiration to myself and all the devotees, that he's not disturbed at all by or fearful by the fact that death is staring him in the face, as the English saying goes, but just fully convinced of the fact that we're all in Krishna's shelter, and ultimately it's up to Krishna, and not expressing any, no sign of any fear or he was, the only thing was that he wanted to do service, and he felt, we were talking about this morning in the class, that he felt disturbed, not though he had, as he was describing, it was very difficult bodily condition, but his disturbance was that he couldn't do the service that he wanted to do properly. So I was saying how difficult it is in sickness to maintain your consciousness, even to chant at all. And he said, well, I haven't chanted regularly for months now. He said, and he said, it's difficult to maintain consciousness. He said, well, actually, I didn't really have that problem. He needed that to maintaining consciousness. And we discussed a little bit, he had on the wall some poem by a famous Welsh poet, which do not go gentle into that good night, rage, rage against the passing of the light. That was like the refrain, so that was like his motto, fight against Dylan Thomas. Yes. I said, well, he himself, you know, he died from an alcohol overdose or something like that. So had a little talk about Dylan Thomas and his poem. It's great. I mean, from very expressive. He's just a very gifted poet. He's just anyway, we talk a little bit about him. And then so then we discussed about, you know, his, you know, he's, what's going on? Are you going to stay with us or not? I was saying that I think a lot depends on your own desire. He was telling me about this devotee, Tridandi, who's from Italy, whose wife had got cancer and she'd been cured, and the doctor had come from South India who had this cancer cure. And I was saying, yeah, that's good, but a lot depends also on your own desire to stay. And he said, yeah. So I'm paraphrasing. So he said, so, you know, well, you know, why should I stay? So he's saying that, well, apart from anything else, we're so, the number of Prabhupada's disciples who are leading and taking the burden of being leaders in this world, there aren't so many of them, and whoever's here in this world, they give so much inspiration to the devotees. And then we were discussing, you know, how many sannyasis are there who are directly initiated by Prabhupada, sannyas initiation. We went through, you know, there's Jayapataka Maharaj, Satsarupa Maharaj, Charikmara Maharaj, Bhakti Charu Maharaj, Navi Yogendra Maharaj, Sridhar Maharaj, and Lokanath Maharaj is only, you know, the seven. That's all. who are active in ISKCON. So there's so few, so I'm saying. So then he was discussing, yeah, I want to stay. And he was telling me it was all the different things that he wanted to do. And he said, especially I want to, he's telling me he had some inheritance and he wants to use that for the children of this movement, he said. Especially I want to do something for them. And then he was, of course, talking about his health condition. He said, he was talking about, well, some people, they just fast to death. They just stop eating and then they pass away. So he said, now, first of all, he was saying, if I eat, then I'll die. And if I fast, I'll die. So I might as well eat. And I related some incident that I'd heard when I came to Vrindavan. I think it must have been... It was 1 month. It was just about 1 month before Prabhupada passed away. I came to Vrindavan for less than 1 day. We were on book distribution. We had this idea we should just distribute books, not be with Prabhupada. We'll be with Prabhupada by distributing books. So I'd come with a book distribution party to Vrindavan just to have Prabhupada's darshan at that time. And at that time I heard someone had said that Prabhupada had said, I never heard this again later, that the daughter told him not to eat chapatis, and then Prabhupada said, well, if you can't eat chapatis, then what's the point of staying anyway? If life gets so severe that you can't even eat chapatis, then what's the point of staying? So I related that to him. So I can't remember exactly the order of the conversation, but then he said something like, he said, if again I'm going into coma, and again he said, so several times it's been like that, and he said, I've come back because I've fought to stay, but he said, I think that if it comes again, I might just go. So it appears that's what happened, because Suhota Maharaj told me that he told me that Sridhar Maharaj had passed away, and then I asked about some of the details, and Suhota Maharaj told that I'd asked that, well, were devotees with him at the time, were they chanting? He said, yeah, he'd had a bad night and it seemed like he was going, so the devotees were with him and they were chanting. So it seems like that he had a bad night means, we might have a bad night, the dog's barking or something like that, but it was, he was again going into one of those phases of a lot of physical difficulty, and so it seems he thought, well, I might as well go. That's what he'd said to me, that if it gets bad again like that, I might just go. So it seemed, even though he had plans, for me it was a bit of a shock when Maharaj said, we shouldn't have been shocked, because, it looked like he was going to go, but at the same time he was talking about staying, and
yeah.
I just presumed he was going to, he was going to get better and stay.
There was also on the Pamhonet an announcement from those disciples. This was when I was in Mayapur, just before I came here. And they were talking about that meeting. That doctor had come. And so there was hope, and they were announcing it. It was a message to all members of Fan Hope.
Oh, yeah.
And they're saying that, everyone should pray that this treatment will work. And so that was just before I left Mayapur. So it was, I had a long talk with him in Mumbai in April, almost a year ago. And this time I wanted to go see him. One time when I was planning to go, then another Maharaj told me he's not feeling so well, so I better not. And then when I saw this message, I thought, I kind of like my impetus to, really try to see him kind of, diminished a bit, because I thought, well, it looks like things are getting better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now that means I have to go down to Salem, so I had to fix my mind on that.
That reminds me, in the course of that last conversation I had with him, he was telling me that according to his chart, March the 22nd is the, it's like the watershed day when he's supposed to be getting better. Oh. So, you know, I didn't expect it to go before March the 22nd, or at all. You know, it's like he was going to, 22nd is, it looks good, and he should be, that should be the time when the medicine starts to take the effect. But maybe he could have saved it anyway. He decided to go back to home, back to Godhead. And like I was saying, we don't really appreciate people until so much until they go away, and it's a bit of a shock. And then, you know, at the same time, I don't really feel so sad. Actually, one thing you said the in the class, how Prabhupada had said that it's going back to God is like waking up from a daydream. So I'm just thinking, you know, it'll only be a few more moments before I see him again. Because, you know, it may be cause of births for me, but, you know, it'll only be a moment anyway, so, in another sense. Same going back to Godhead, you know, it's just like in the newspapers, whoever dies, they say, they write, if they're somewhat pious, they write Golok Prapt or someone, but then it's more like Narak Prapt, it may be. You know, everyone thinks that, oh, they've gone to heaven. But you, in most cases, especially in the modern age, it may not be. But I don't think we should have any doubt that that Sridhar Maharaj has gone. There's this magazine, Back to Prabhupada, which I've heard of, I haven't seen, but he's really gone back to Prabhupada, which means back to home, back to Godhead. I don't think we should have any doubt about that, because his whole life was engaged in the service of Srila Prabhupada, and he was in Mayapur Dham, the most merciful Dham, surrounded by devotees chanting the holy names. I mean, if anyone has any doubt about that he went back to Godhead, then I think they don't have doubt in Krishna and the whole process of Krishna consciousness, because if you don't go back to Godhead in those circumstances, then, you know, what do you have to do? You know, is Krishna so unmerciful? Is Krishna doesn't want us to go, or what's going on here? He must have gone back to Godhead. So that's wonderful, that's glorious. Prabhupada wrote to Jayananda, he wrote a letter to him after he passed away, that Krishna has released you from that condition of suffering, because Jayananda had been suffering from leukemia, and given you a better position in which to serve him, to serve Krishna. So it's the same thing with Sridhar Maharaj, that Krishna's given him better opportunity to go on serving. He was, he remained throughout his life serving the Lord. He's true to his vows. That in itself is a great achievement. How many, you were saying how almost nonchalantly Prabhupada gave him sannyas. Mm. But many didn't, they took it right, they may have seemed to them that Prabhupada was giving it lightly, and they took it lightly, but he took his vows very seriously. He said once that, Jashamati Nandan Prabhu told me this, that he said that, well, if I think about it, maybe for my nature I'd be better suited as a grihastha, but Prabhupada gave me sannyas and I'm going to stick to it. So he was very committed to his vows, and he was very inspirational, especially in Croatia and Slovenia. Was very, isn't it? You can all say. You're from Serbia, so you might not know. But in Croatia and Slovenia, he spent time with devotees, and they very much appreciated that. How he spent time, because most of the, I mean, Harikesh never even went there. He just initiated. And, so. And then others who go there, including myself, it's mostly in and out. But he spent time with the devotees. Smita Krishna Maharaj also very much like that. Right. Very much appreciated. Spent time with them, talked with them. So a glorious life in the service of Krishna. Jai. Hare Krishna. So emulate that. Just keep on going steadily in Krishna's service. Whatever may happen. Whatever may happen. Actually, we've all had it very lightly. Generally, the general condition of the world in Kali Yuga is highly disturbed. And much of the world is highly disturbed. But most of us have not been in the middle of wars for months on end. We haven't been in directly in the earthquake area or famine area. So we've had it fairly easily so far, although any of these things could happen to any of us. Or as Prabhupada said as he was lying on his bed those last few months in Vrindavan, don't think this won't happen to you. So we've all had it fairly easy so far. Whatever difficulties we may have, we've all had it fairly easy compared to what others have been through. So the difficulties, they are a test. And lack of difficulties can also be a test. Because then we take Krishna consciousness very lightly, complacently. But whatever happens, we should be fixed in the philosophy of the Absolute Truth, as Balaram advised Rukmini, that you just try to be fixed in philosophical understanding and remain Krishna conscious. So we're fortunate when we can get such association, we should take it. Now we have the association of Sahodra Maharaj, who is giving us this, giving his full energy to enlighten us in the intricacies of the philosophy, the greatest welfare, the greatest personality. So we're very fortunate. Prabhupada has made personalities who have dedicated their lives for propagating the holy names of the Lord. So you also become, as much as you can, take guidance, inspiration from those who have dedicated their lives for propagating the holy names of the Lord, and go on in whatever capacity. Not everyone's going to be sannyasi, traveling preacher, but in whatever capacity, preach Krishna consciousness. This will be most pleasing to Srila Prabhupada and all his disciples, Sridhar Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Vivo, Maharaj Ki Jai.
We'll finish there. Sridhar Maharaj Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.